and trapped in or overwhelmed by a fire. So it's not, I imagine they've really changed to a much more professional approach. I did see, you know, in the news last week that over 100 firefighters from Mexico had arrived to help fight fires here in Canada, in BC, which is really good. And a lot of that happens nowadays. You know, during our off season, a lot of our firefighters will travel to California, where I think their worst fire season is in the fall, rather, you know. But, you know, firefighters are traveling around to support different regions, right, you know, during their worst periods, and that's good to see.
I think that thing about, as the exact wording here is, forcibly constrict random civilians. Yeah. I think there was a... perhaps the last time that practice was done. Now, this is in Canada, where we didn't have a draft until after the World War II. But I just can't imagine that sensibility holding water.
And not for something so dangerous and difficult as wildfire fighting. But I guess it's, you know, a lot of it digging and creating fire breaks and stuff like that. All right, thanks for that tidbit, Peter.
Okay.
All right, we got some Jack White coming up here, this is from his new album, and the track is called Dollar Bill.
Signals through the air.
Jack White and Dollar Bill from his new album, United States of America. And you just can't shut up, Jack White. Anyway, time for our good friend Pablo Vimas. Yeah. It's time now for Gardening with Embark. And as he does each week, joining me in the studio is our gardens expert, Pablo Vimas. Hello.
Hi, good morning.
Pablo's, of course, from our sister organization over at Embark Sustainability.
Yes, we are in the ground floor in the Student Union building, just across each other.
Yeah.
So it's nice to meet and chat and talk about what's happening in our two beautiful gardens that we have here in campus.
Yeah.
This week, we started with a bit of fog. So we had this long weekend, and later we had this red sun.
Mm-hmm. Lots of smoke from the wildfires.
And then we started thinking, well, do my plants like this fog?
Yeah.
Because we get the air quality that's not good for us as humans, but yeah. What about the plant?
Mm-hmm.
And I said, well, most of the plants, they require sunlight.
Yeah.
So plants in summer, all our summer crops, they really require direct sunlight.
Mm-hmm.
In case of the potatoes, tomatoes, corn, beans, they are really need lots of sunlight. But there are other crops that they very well do very well in the shade.
Right.
Like lettuce, all the leafy greens.
Yeah.
Okay, so the sun is not shiny, not bright, but still is there. Still some light is filtrated through the smoke coming through the plant. So yeah, I think my lettuces and my radishes, they will be just lovely. No, they are not. But yeah, the demanding plants, like I mentioned, the summer crops, they are really requiring lots of sunlight.
Yeah.
So that as well make us think that when we had to have if let's say in the future this sky comes very cloudy, like now, we will have to move to a less demanding crops less demanding with sunlight, so we will have to move into leafy greens. Yeah,
right. And so far we've only had a few days earlier this week, but if it extends longer, I can't remember how many years ago where it seemed like all of August was
all of that
was under the smog of wildfires.
Yes, so for that time, so we see that we have realized like our summer crops are not going to do well, but our leafy greens, the long ones like be in the shade, they will be doing very well. Yeah. Then it turned now, everything cleared up, it was a couple of days, and now we have a nice, bright blue sky, bright sun.
Yeah.
And we start noticing the herbs.
Mm-hmm.
They were at one point, they were covered on flowers.
Yeah.
The flowers have dying down and the new shoots are popping.
Right.
So in case oregano and thyme that we have in here.
Mm-hmm.
So, well, I would say if we have harvested our herbs a week before, that would be the best. So summer, almost midsummer, it's time to harvest the herbs.
Mm-hmm.
What I like to do is make a bunch. So make a bunch and tie them up.
Yep.
And then I trim it, rather than just trimming and later trying to put all together.
Right.
Yeah, so with all the herbs, oregano, thyme, I make a little bunch, tie it, and trim it below the...
Yeah, just tie it off with some twine.
And below that I just trim it and then ready to hang it and let it dry out in no direct sunlight, but in the shade with the running wind, so the fresh air dries it out. So lovely. So this will be the time to harvest all our oregano, thyme, lemon balm before it goes into flower and seeds. And that's one thing that we have to, if you have lemon balm in your garden, make sure that you pinch the flowers before it goes to seed.
Yeah.
Lemon balm tends to sell seed and they becomes into a weed.
Right.
It will take all over. The same with the oregano. Oregano, lovely, nice flowers, lovely bees, a ton of bees in there, wasps enjoying the nectar. and they're willing to see it. The wind comes, the seeds goes over the place, and
right,
you realize
so already. You're not just saving your harvest. You're saving your garden for future problems.
Yes, you just prevent the garden from future problems because, like, yeah, oregano here, oregano there. Like, yeah, and then you have to start weeding the oregano. Yep. So lemon balm tend to do that. Oregano tend to do that. Thyme not much. Thyme stays where it is. Yeah. And then we have here as well our lemon verbena. Lemon verbena is grows over the summer, fall arrives and mm-hmm. we lose the leaves. It's a perennial if we protect it from the snow. It's big with lots of leaves, and those leaves as well can be collected mm-hmm. At the same time that you prune the bush and collect and dry the leaves, and then you have for making a beautiful tea, delicious tea over the winter and fall. So yeah, rosemary as well. We been harvesting in order to keep give a shape to the bush.
Yeah.
All that again with the rosemary is much easier. You just trim the tips and let you make your little bunch and hang it up. Yeah, so lots of rosemary. Our sage. Mm-hmm. The sage at the moment is in recovering mode because it flowered. And after flowering, we trim the flowers, we deadhead the flowers. And then, because although sage likes dry weather, and warm weather, it still needs watering. So I've been having a little trouble here keeping the sage watered constantly. Usually is at the beginning of summer is when the sage has beautiful big leaves, but now I notice that the second shoot or leaves are coming up. So as well, make sure that you keep watering those herbs, those sage in particular. Chives keep growing, but if you have garlic chives. Garlic chives at the moment are into flower.
Right.
So garlic chives is a plant that flowers over the fall, during the fall. So the onion chives flowers during the spring, garlic chives during the fall. So at the moment, the garlic chives are really, you will see the stalks with the flowers still closed, when they will open for the fall. So that's something to have in your garden. So again, for the pollinators, if you are interested in supporting the pollinators, there is food for them.
During the fall. You're not worrying about them flowering. Like, you know, some plants you want to avoid the flowering, but for like the chives and some of these other herbs, it's okay?
Yes, it's okay. But again, once the flowers dies, you need to pull the stalk and everything, the flower and the stalk, deadhead them.
Yeah.
Because they will have a seed.
Yeah,
you will have chives all around, and garlic chives and onion chives all around your original plant.
Yeah.
So once the plant flowers, the flower dies, just remove everything.
Yeah.
That forces the plant to make new flowers, but you as well prevent the self-seeding.
Yeah.
So you don't have to have extra work weeding the plants that you don't want. Chives, you can dehydrate. That's very interesting. What I did, I do is take the chives, again, make a bunch, trim it, and then you at home, you can just chop mm-hmm. into small little pieces, half a centimeter, and then you put in the dehydrator, and then you put in a mason jar, and you can keep it. So you can use in the future for adding to your stews, because it's all brown, so you can add to your salads. But whenever you need some chives, you just add it like that,
Right. But for most of the other herbs, you just need to bunch them and hang them.
Yes, bunch, hang them, and then
typically upside down.
Yes. The important is that there is wind running, wind passing through, so they don't get grow mold. That's the only issue. We don't want anything grow mold, so it's just drying nicely with air dry. You can put in the oven, but you have to be more present in there. Well, when you just hang it, you just leave it, you know, just. Then for using, you just can crunch it or putting it inside a paper bag, and then you just press it, and all the leaves would break into little pieces, and then you can fill your jars or any container with your.
And once they're dry, they're pretty stable, so you can just put them in a container, and they're just like any store-bought.
Yeah, it's very, very stable. You can keep it for as long as you want, and use as you need it,
And that's really great because, of course, you know, as wonderful it is to have the fresh herbs to use in your cooking and your salads and stuff, you're almost always going to have, more than you can use in a short period of time.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah. So having fresh is nice, but you will have to use as soon as possible. But you cannot consume everything. So having dried out that you have for almost for the full year. Sometimes I have two or three cups. I mean, containers. Which container at least half a liter of chai herbs just dried there. And then we are sharing. We are sharing with everyone here at Embark.
Excellent. Well, herbs are one of the easiest thing to grow. Am I right about that, or am I just assuming?
No, it's one of the easiest things. The only thing that we need to remember is the ecosystem, because we have where they grow, where is the right environment they like to grow. So they don't like too much water. They like they enjoy sunlight, on the shade. They do well. No much water, so don't overwater them. They are perennials. They like they can stand the dry, the dryness, and but they are not like basil. Basil is a plant that grows in the summer, a lot of sunlight, and it's nice to be constantly watered. So oregano and thyme is like okay. If there's too much water, you will see the plant suddenly reacting like I'm not happy here.
And you know, I do my growing, you know, in small containers in on my patio, and I've often liked herbs because they're sort of easy for a number of small pots, and you know, it's easy to harvest and then make use of.
So herbs are good plants for small containers. So a small container is at least 8 inches tall. The amount of soil, that's very important. So 8 inches tall container, that's enough for any herb. Lower than that, the soil dries out quickly, and then you are constantly watering. But enough soil amount retains water, and the plant will do well. You can have different containers with different herbs, and containers are great because once the rainy season arrives or the cold weather arrives, you can move those containers indoors. And you can have it in your house at 20 degrees, and the plants are happy. And the only thing that you need to make sure is that they're in a space that you don't mind getting wet, or in a container. The container should be inside another container, so if you water, the water doesn't damage the flooring and things like that. But it's nice to have what we call countertop gardening. So have a small container with herb in your countertop in the kitchen. So and you go all winter with it.
Excellent. Well, you know, the herbs are great for your cooking and something you're going to use a lot of.
Yeah, so herbs gives flavor to the food. That is, it enhances the flavor of the food. So that's why we use herbs. At the moment, it's time to start. If you are into parsley, this is the time to start growing seeds of parsley.
Right.
So when fall arrives, you will have your young shoots of parsley that you can just trim it and eat fresh. So, yeah, parsley is delicious. I like parsley and peanuts. A combination of parsley, fresh parsley and peanuts is a unique combination that I like. So parsley, now, if you are in the garden and you have a spot, start time to plant parsley. There are two types, flat leaf and the curly leaf. So both of them are beautiful. Curly leaf is brings a nice structure to the garden, and both of them are very delicious and tasty.
Excellent. Well, thanks so much for all these all this wisdom on herbs.
Happy to share. Yes, and thanks to the garden that shares their knowledge, shared experiences, because all what I'm sharing is about what happens in the garden and how I've been learning. So if you are just starting, don't be worry about that. The gardening teaches us, and we just need to be patient and remember what the garden has teach us. And next year you will become better and better.
Excellent. Thanks so much, Pablo Vimas of Embark Sustainability. How do people find out about Embark?
Embark is a nonprofit organization, and you can visit our website at embarksustainability.org or visit our social channels at Embark Sustainability, which we post lots of events happening. One of the things that we'll be calling soon is for gardening during the fall cohort. So a gardening cohort during the fall, we will start at the end of September, and we go all the way to the first week of November. So August doesn't finish, but we are ready thinking in September and the fall.
Yeah. Excellent. Well, thanks so much. We'll see you again next week.
See you this week. See you.
And thanks to Pablo for another excellent set of interesting tips and information.
Yes, and now I'm going to talk about an exhibit at the Paul Kyle Gallery. I'm going to tell you the address, so on. I'm going to, because I'm part of the website. And this is more of a positive photograph. They're very large, blown up photographs.
Yeah.
Very extreme clarity. He often had this photographer, Edward Bertinsky. He would often have to rent a helicopter or a plane to take it.
Yeah, now, he's quite well known for this kind of work.
Oh, but you know about him?
Yep, yeah.
Oh, I just found out about him at Paul Kyle Gallery. So maybe going to add some. Here's a positive one, which is kind of interesting. This is a photograph of a, in India, of a sort of a water passage thing. Developed in northwest India, step wells are a passive system designed for collective access to underground water between 600 AD and 1850. Over 3,000 of these wells were built. Although constructed by hand using simple tools, step well architecture is highly engineered. So looks kind of interesting, and it sort of, it shows something you wouldn't think kind of existed, or that it existed in such a long time ago. Also sort of a, actually it's funny about being at times too much Western centric, because it kind of, you might say, well, that we've got the Odyssey film, you know, and all that. But the thing is that that's sort of interesting in India to have that sort of technology done. There was another kind of one that was, here's another one. He had to go up in the air for this. This was in Texas. It was showing his, how they're irrigating themselves, and they make this perfect circle. The crops, it looks a bit odd. There was something, that was another thing here. Oh, well, doesn't matter. It was actually, I can't find the exact photograph, but it was potash mining over in Russia.
Yeah.
And they had, like, the seabed stuff, and this was a naturally incurrent phenomenality that was sort of interesting. And now we're going to get the hours of the Paul Kyle Gallery here.
Yeah, he's really known for those sort of really unique sort of environmental photographs, often showing those really strange sort of interfaces between industrial effects in the land and landscape, which can be really interesting. So at this exhibition, they have the photos in large format.
Yes,
that would be really interesting, because I've seen much of his work, but only ever like either on the internet or in a magazine or something, where it's, you know, it's pretty small. And I can imagine, you know, from the one, I'm not an expert on the fellow, but I've seen a number of his photographs, and I can only imagine that seeing them full size, which is probably, you know, the format that the artist intended, must be quite striking. I mean, you went and saw the exhibition. And
yes. The address of the, they're open Tuesday through Saturday, closed Sunday and Monday.
In the evenings?
No, it's kind of banker hours, unfortunately. 11:30 a.m. to 5 a.m.
Okay,
5 p.m. I should
say. Yeah.
So if you're at First and Main, the main thoroughfare is like Second and Main.
Yeah.
So they're at First. So it's 258 East First Avenue. You walk east from First and Main.
Interesting.
And so
it's very accessible, because that's right by the SkyTrain.
Yes, it's a bit of a
Main Street, Science World SkyTrain, so pretty easy to get to.
So anyway, the Paul Kyle Gallery, go online.
Yeah.
And just say the address, 258 East First Avenue, Tuesday through Saturdays, 11:30 a.m. to 5 PM. One thing that they had, one of the interesting photographs they had was of ship breaking in Bangladesh. And actually what they were breaking were, they found out because of the oil leaks,
mm-hmm.
that they couldn't use certain tankers anymore because they had changed the regulation. So they had to break it. You break it down, you get... But actually, the photographer got him sick during this because there were toxic elements in it, and well, often
imagine what it's like for the workers. Hey?
No, it was bad.
He's just visiting for a while. They're there all the time.
No, well, they got 12-year-old children.
Yeah,
part of doing this. It's one thing I checked into further that was. Just about the thing in general, other than ship breaking. They're trying to get certain regulations that it's just not just thrown into the third world as such, you know. And I did mention previously about the big tire pile, and they got two giant large ones showing. And he took the photograph before lightning happened.
Mm-hmm.
And that was sort of interesting because it just sort of developed starting in 1930. People tended to... For some reason,
well, you know, I guess with the rise of the automobile, all of a sudden you have a massive number of tires getting worn out, and then what do you do with them all?
Because that happened after World War II, because there wasn't.
No, but I mean, you know, the automobile sort of became a thing around 1910 or so. So, I mean, ownership wasn't as great as it would be after World War II, but you still had plenty of motor vehicles, private vehicles, trucks, etc., all running on. Running and wearing out tires that you got to do something with.
Yeah, so it, we don't have that in British Columbia somewhere, a bunch of tires somewhere.
Well, I've driven past some piles of tires in BC.
Where do they tend to put their tires here in this province?
I mean, they haven't been huge ones, but I think I'm trying to remember now off the top of my head, but I think there's somewhere along Highway 1 up the Fraser Valley where you can see.
Do they take it from the dumps and put them there?
Well, sometimes, you know, it'd be like a tire place. You go get your tires changed, and then they take your old tires off and put your new tires on, and then they just stack it in the back.
We don't got one giant pile yet.
I don't think so. So I think maybe they try and avoid that because of stuff like that. And once tires are... I mean, they burn and burn and they smolder, and it's super toxic smoke. Cause it's all that black rubber and petroleum stuff because a lot of tires are made from synthetic rubber these days.
Where did you come across the photographer as such, in books? Or
Well, I do photography myself, so I sort of tend to look for those kind of stuff. And so he shows up in various places. He's pretty well known. So it's actually quite exciting that this exhibition is happening here with you know, the photographs properly displayed like that.
Had you only seen them in books, Magnus? Or had you
Yes.
Ever, you never saw it in the gallery setting?
No. So I'm going to go check it out.
Yeah, okay.
All right, well, thanks for bringing that to our attention. We are just about out of time, and Democracy Now! Is coming up in about a minute. And later on today... we will have Wandering Rhythms up following Democracy Now! And typically Tuesdays with Leslie Wang up at 3 p.m. And lots more great programming throughout the evening. Don't forget to tune in tomorrow morning at 10 a.m. Danny's going to be in the chair here bringing you a new host of stories and what he's been looking into throughout the week on Wednesday. Nicole will be bringing you Intravenous at 10 a.m., women's issues, gender issues, and a whole lot more. And Thursday at 10 a.m., Jesse Wensloff will be here with another edition of Speak Up. And our special summer staff, Summer Heroes, Hallelujah, and Stella will be programming the Friday Speak Up, also starting at 10. So lots of great programming here. Stay tuned for Democracy Now! Coming up right about now.